The Fan on Demand.
A very good day. I'm Nigel Reed, and this is the Soccer Show on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This week, heading for the exits. Terry Dunfield is the latest to leave TFC. Can they do without him? Or should the Reds make room on the roster for a hard-working Canadian international? Also this week, the right fit. Frank Yallop is available after parting company with the Earthquakes. Could he return as Canada's head coach? Or are there better candidates for the national job? Plus, the headache over headgear. Is the CSA right to suspend Quebec over its ban on turbans, or is Canada's governing body being heavy-handed in its management of the issue? All that and more, plus your opinion, this week right here on The Soccer Show. No Yarushi this week. I'm afraid he's away entertaining. At least that's what he told me. And that means that he's not here to entertain you, but he'll be back in 7 days' time, or so he assures me. He will be barely missed, because we've assembled an all-star, potentially award-winning roundtable, none of whom have problems in the opinion department. They are, in alphabetical order, Kurt Larson from the Toronto Sun, Sportsnet.ca's soccer editor John Molinaro to my right and perhaps your left, and last, but by no means least, Canadian Olympian and the pride of Salt Spring Island, BC. I knew I'd get it on the soccer show one day. Claire Rustad.
You do know I have been here before, right?
Oh, I know you've been here before.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
I just wanted to get the word Salt Spring Island, BC on the soccer show.
You've said that before, too.
Have I?
Yeah.
I thought it was a first as well.
No, it's called Alzheimer's. It's all right now.
And you'd know as a doctor, of course.
Yeah.
Welcome to you all. It could get feisty. That's just the way we like it on this show. Molinaro, for example, tweeted this yesterday. Going on Nigel Reed's soccer show tomorrow night, Unfortunately, Kurt Larson will also be a guest, absolutely dreading this, pure dread. Explain yourself, Molinaro.
Oh, it was sarcasm. Kurt and
no,
I are
really?
Good. Yeah, Kurt and I are good friends.
I've stopped giving him rides to practice now. TFC
exactly.
Training.
I start taking the bus now. So yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's got that bad?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is there a bus that gets you there?
There is.
Is there?
Yeah. There's a bus that goes from Downsview Station. So,
really?
Yeah.
They separate us in the TFC press box for that reason.
Exactly.
Does it stop at your grade 8 class on the way or no?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Wow.
Well, it didn't matter whether you gave him, he gave you a lift to practice today or not, because you weren't there, but he was. So, Larson, before we get any further, you got any tasty titbits from TFC practice today, the day on which they decided to waive Terry Dunfield?
I mean, that's just, it's all in a process of,
really?
Of what Ryan Nelson said he was going to do when he took over the club, which is the team they started with at the beginning of the season is going to look a lot different than the one that ends it. And I think that's just, you know, Terry Dunfield leaving today, being waived, is just a part of that process. The writing was on the wall. Jeremy Hall has been a staple in the midfield, and Nelson quite likes him. And then bringing in Matias Laba, and then Osorio performing well. And then, of course, Dunfield went out with the PCL injury to his knee, so he's been out for a while, and the writing was kind of on the wall when he came back, and he wasn't playing. He was a healthy scratch, that eventually he'd be on the way out, and today confirmed that.
So no surprises that Dunfield is done as far as Toronto FC is concerned?
I don't think so. It's unfortunate because I quite like Terry. I think he was a useful player and quite a nice gentleman. Happens to live in my neighborhood, by the way.
Well, he must be good. He must be a nice guy if he's in your neighborhood.
But no, I think...
I think I live in your neighborhood, actually.
Oh, okay. So. Well, there you go.
We'll all exchange addresses after the show.
But I think the writing on the wall was certainly, you know, there once Laba came in, and Hall has done so well. And I think if he didn't get that significant pay increase, then, you know, maybe they would have kept him, but at whatever it was, 120,000.
So that's,
it's a bit of steep.
So that's steep. That's the fault of the previous regime, presumably. The fact that, because, I mean, he was a very, you know, by MLS standards, he was a sort of an economical, combative midfielder, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. And I'll be interested to see where he latches on next, because as a Canadian, you know, he counts as an international with, you know, U.S. teams who potentially want to get after him. So, and I'm not sure Vancouver or Montreal would take a punt on him. So he might have to drop down to the NASL.
Here's the interesting thing, Claire, and you would know about this, having sort of played in this position and many others on a soccer field. I mean, I'm of the opinion that any team, needs not necessarily the most technically gifted player in the world, but somewhere on the roster, there's always room for that hard-tackling, get-stuck-in sort of midfielder who destroys and gives you 100%, you know, exactly what you're going to get out of him or her. And you know, well, previously to what John said, didn't actually cost too much.
Exactly. And that's, that type of player can really be a touchstone, not only for the midfield, but for the rest of the team, right? So the game starts to go down the dumps for you. And that type of player who's always in it and always giving 100%, maybe not even the most vocal player, maybe just somebody who exhibits their commitment through their actions, that type of player is somebody that a team needs to look to when things get tough.
I think Dunfield is sort of a male Desiree Scott in many ways.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the player I was thinking of when you brought it up.
Mm. It's maybe we're getting too teary-eyed because he's a Canadian. Should that make any difference to his status?
No, it shouldn't. Mm-hmm. But when these moves are made, they're made for a reason, and that's so they can bring more players in. Nelson confirmed to me today that they've extended Robert Earnshaw till the end of the season.
Really?
So who knows? Maybe they needed that salary from Dunfield in order to make that move. Mm. And of course, it opens a roster spot. Clears the salary cap space, and Ryan and Nelson today said that they have three or four targets that they're really, really looking at to bring in at the transfer window, and he's promised big things at that transfer window, so people are going to expect a lot.
Talking of transfer windows, I think it was a comment from Ryan Nelson in the last week or so, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, but he basically said that all the senior experienced coaches that he'd spoken to had said basically to get a team in your likeness, you need at least three transfer windows. And he's not quite sure that the first one this year was a real one because he was still getting his own feet under the table. So if maybe that was half a one, so maybe he's got two and a half to go. I mean, do you get the sense from the fans that you talk to, John, that things are just beginning to look a little rosier for this franchise because everybody knows what it hasn't, frankly, achieved over the last six and a bit years?
I think yes and no. I mean, to a certain extent, because, you know, they're still finding their way, and Nelson is, you know, they've punted quite a few players already, right? And now they're bringing in, you know, they've punted Dunfield and they're potentially going to sign some new players. So I think just the sheer moves, it's clear that he's got something in mind and I think he's headed in the right direction. I still think the issue is just results on the field. I mean, and Ryan can talk all he wants about, you know, progress being made, but the fact of the matter is they have one win in whatever it is, 13 games. They're winless in 11. Yeah, they're better than last year, but that was one of the worst teams in MLS history.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, the bar was incredibly low.
Exactly. I mean, so it's hardly anything to hang your hat on, but which he continually does. And even progress from the start of the season, we're still seeing the same mistakes. They can't close out games. They can't pick up points on the road. They're not putting in complete 90-minute performances. So I'm not sure they've progressed as much as Ryan Nelson would have us think.
Yeah, and another quote much more recently, which might have been, I think, today, when you were speaking to him probably after practice. I mean, he didn't leave anything open to interpretation in terms of what he thinks has happened and how short-sighted the rest of us might be in terms of the progress that his team is making.
I believe I believe Nelson's quote was, "You'd have to be deaf, dumb, or blind to not see the progress that the team has made in whatever you want to say 6 months or since he took over." But I think you have to look beyond the field and beyond the results at this point and actually look at the progress that's been made within the cap, because we talked about it. Torsten Frings is no longer on the cap. That opened up a lot of space. They're trying to move Danny Califf. That's going to open up a lot, and Stephen Fry. It's more freedom to do whatever you want come the transfer window. And I think we have to wait and see what happens in July to, you know, really, you know, grade how this first 6 months has gone.
I mean, fans, you know, bless them, have been ridiculously loyal to this franchise through all the changes of players and all the changes of coaches and GMs and so on and so forth. But John makes a good point, Claire. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether it's a men's team, a women's team. Results matter, and the fans, you know, they'll be as patient as they possibly can. But when you're actually a player, you know yourself, results matter, not only in terms of the perception you have of yourself and your team as a player, but the way other teams step on the field against you.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to talk about the Confederations Cup in a little while. Yeah. And how this is, we're, you know, a year out from the next Men's World Cup. Yeah. And the Confederations Cup is a chance for the public and for other teams to see that, to see the product that you have, to gain some interest within the country that it's actually going to be played in. And a team like Brazil has a lot to show and hasn't really provided their country with a lot of results in the last few years. And they had a very disappointing exit, I thought, in the World Cup. But it's the same type of thing. I mean, they're how long – it's Brazil. We all know it'll be forever. But how long can a fan base actually sustain their enthusiasm for a team that's not producing and not winning tournaments?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, a week or so ago, 22,000 sold out BMO Field in Toronto for a women's national game against the USA. I think I'm right in saying you might have been on the last Canadian team to beat the US, and that was in 2001, there or thereabouts, or maybe it was LeBlanc and Sinclair, but it's been a long time. Talk about the perception that other teams had of Canada when you were a part of that team, and the thought process that you went through, knowing that other teams knew how you played, so they would kind of know your strengths and weaknesses.
And it wasn't exactly a challenging style of play to defend against that we played back then. I think that's been beaten to death. But I think the perception back then, it wasn't necessarily just of us, but of any team that wasn't in the top three in women's soccer in the world at that time. There were maybe 3-4 competitive teams at the time, if that. And there was a big drop off after that. And now we've got maybe 10 competitive teams that are vying for good rankings, that are vying for medals, vying for good placements in the Olympics and in the World Cup. And now Canada's part of that, as opposed to being just another team that the U.S. has to play and can look down upon, et cetera.
We'll talk more about the women's team and your thoughts of how they're playing at the moment. And again, talking about progress, people will remember the bronze medal. And, you know, as John might say, hang their hat on that and look to that as a springboard to 2015. Among many other things, I need to talk to you very quickly about another of your little sidelines, so to speak, because you're not putting the boots or the cleats on anymore, but you are part of the National Organizing Committee for 2015. So in 30 seconds or so, tell our listeners and viewers what that involves.
At the moment, I believe there are 7 of us on the committee involved with organizing the 2014 Under-20 Women's World Cup and the 2015 Women's World Cup, basically from an administrative standpoint, sorting out venues and budgets and that type of thing. So, mm-hmm. It's new to me. Mm. there's nothing medical anything in it, so I feel a little out of place, to be honest.
They're not going to co-opt you on as the Canadian physio,
no,
or anytime soon between now and 2015.
No, and none of them at
despite
my first
the fact that you're qualified.
Exactly, and none of them at my first meeting came up to me and said, "Hey, can you take a look at this rash for me? It's been here for like 2 weeks."
When things go terribly wrong, we come to her next time.
No,
that's your choice, Kurt.
It is, seriously.
Yes, I'm sure it is.
We've at your peril.
We've got so much to discuss on the soccer show this week, and we're already a third of the way through it, and we've hardly scratched the surface, which is the way it is on the soccer show. By the way, if you'd like to get in touch, we'd love to hear your opinion. Email the show, nigel@fan590.com, nigel@fan590.com, or tweet me @Nigel_Reed. You're watching the soccer show on Sportsnet World and listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Well, 50% of that is true. Reed, definitely no Urushi this week. He will be back in 7 days' time. But we have a quality round table. John Molinaro, soccer editor of sportsnet.ca, Kurt Larson from the Toronto Sun, and Claire Rustad, who played in the Olympics for her country and got rained on, as far as I can remember, in Beijing in 2008.
Yep.
Didn't you? I seem to, because I called that game, and the game went on for about 3.5-4 hours.
There was a 2.5-hour rain delay.
Yeah, there was.
It was like Wimbledon.
Yeah, and the CBC didn't pay me by the minute, unfortunately.
They didn't pay me by the minute either.
I'm sure they didn't. If you'd like to contact the Soccer Show or any of our guests, please do. You can email us, nigel@fan590.com, nigel@fan590.com, or if you can squeeze your opinion into 140 characters, tweet me @Nigel_Reed. We were talking about Terry Dunfield's imminent departure from Toronto FC doesn't seem to have gone down terribly well with some of the fans. Alan Koch, I tweeted out something earlier in the day and said what I was saying in the first segment. You know, every team needs a Terry, that hard-working midfielder. Alan says there's not only a role but also a need for players like Terry Dunfield. Hard work is an absolutely vital part of the game. Thank you, Alan. Danny Girard, not the Dan Girard. That's another story. He'll be back on this show in the not-too-distant future. Agrees, he said, indeed. Same in Montreal with Davy Arnault. And there's some symmetry there, John, isn't there? That sort of player who will give you an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, I suppose.
There is. I do think at this point, though, TFC needs more than just honest, hardworking guys. I think they need skilled players. So,
well, that would always help.
If this frees up the opportunity to bring in a more skilled player, then I don't think it's the worst move in the world.
So I said every team needs a Terry, and Mark cleverly said, yes, just not a John Terry. See? Hmm. Clever. Clever,
hilarious.
Mark. Much too clever for me. Two slightly more serious matters. Let's talk turbans. Remarkably enough, the whole of the rest of the world is playing soccer, trying to qualify for the 2014 World Cup. The Confederations Cup is about to kick off in Brazil. And what are we doing in Canada? We're talking about turbans, or the ban on wearing turbans in Quebec. And if you've been following this story over the last few days, you will know that it's getting a little murky. The Canadian Soccer Association has suspended the Quebec Soccer Federation because the QSF won't back down on their ban on turbans, and they say they're not going to say anything now for the next 10 days. So we might have reached a bit of an impasse, or maybe an impasse, as they might say in Quebec, John. Thoughts on this, please?
I think it's absolutely shameful. I think the Quebec Soccer Federation should be absolutely ashamed of themselves, because they're preventing like young kids from playing soccer. And this nonsense about... it's a safety hazard. You know, I think that's pretty transparent. I mean, I could understand if, you know, it's my understanding that in Sikh culture, some men carry a kirpan, which is, you know, a ceremonial sort of knife. It'd be one thing if they wanted to wear that onto the field. Fair enough. I get the safety argument. I think this is just code for, you know, just straight out discrimination with the turban thing.
Okay, so I think there's plenty of people that agree with you on that. Let's talk about the CSA's response to that. That wasn't sort of, you know, one or two or three strikes you were out. There wasn't a warning. There wasn't, what do you think you're doing? We need to talk about this. The CSA came right out and said, that's it. You're suspended until you reverse this ban. Is that the right course of action for the national governing body to take?
Absolutely. I think how long have we been talking about for years about the CSA has to show leadership? The CSA has to show a backbone and kind of take things by the scruff of the neck and really show that they have their house in order. I think that's what they were doing. They were very decisive. They were very clear with the Quebec Soccer Federation. They made a decision and they're sticking by it. And I think they've handled it, the same way I would.
Dr. Clare, put your white coat on for a moment. In all seriousness here, I've read some medical reports or reaction to this story, and I haven't read one yet which says any medically trained practitioner can find any reason why this would be a safety issue, wearing a turban.
The safety issue argument is, they're citing that there's some sort of safety issue. How long is my ponytail here? That's unsafe? I mean, we've all seen that video that went viral of that college player down in New Mexico who almost pulled a ponytail clean off of another girl's head. So the safety thing just isn't a completely non-valid argument. Mm-hmm. Or an invalid argument for people who are literate.
Unlike me.
No, but we have an obesity epidemic in this country. We have an obesity epidemic in North America, and we're trying to ban 5-year-olds from playing soccer because they're wearing a turban. It's completely ridiculous. It's completely against everything that Canada Soccer stands for, and that's getting kids out and playing the game and learning how to love the game. And it doesn't matter what you're wearing on your head in order to do that. And it doesn't matter what you're wearing on your head in order to actually love the game and in order to actually be active and outside and playing. That's what it's all about to me. And I just cannot understand. I have some words that I'm not allowed to say that apply to this story, so I'm just going to stop.
Okay, I'm going to allow you to start, and I'm going to allow Kurt Larson to pick up the discussion.
Yeah, the QSF is showing how off base their intentions are with this, simply because, I mean, it's kids we're talking about, right? We're not talking about competitive players, 18, 19-year-olds, people at the provincial level. And I think they need to come out at least and explain why it's a safety issue. If they did that, people might at least listen, because no one's listening now. Everybody thinks it's outrageous.
Have they made any attempt to do that, either in English or French?
I don't think so. I mean, to play devil's
advocate. Other than to say it's a safety issue.
Because this is a show and it's supposed to be interesting. To play devil's advocate,
yeah.
I mean, it is held up by, I believe, some sort of pin of some sort. You're not allowed to wear jewelry. Women aren't allowed to wear pins in their hair when they play. But then again, is it any less safe than, say, a goalkeeper wearing a baseball cap? Probably not.
Or Petr Cech wearing protective headgear, as he does as one of the leading goalkeepers in the world. And he's been doing that for probably 5 years now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the QSF has, you know, they've shot themselves really in the foot. They've kind of bungled this from the beginning. And there's no reason why, you know, they should be sort of banning turbans. And, you know, I think it's absolutely shameful. And Claire kind of said it quite perfectly about, you're talking about kids, right? Trying to get them involved in the game and interested in the game. You know, what does it say to the Sikh community in Quebec, which, you know, I'm not sure how big it is, that community is, but you have to think it's significant enough that you know, they're banning, you know, these kids from, you know, taking up the game and sort of participating at this participatory level. I think it's shameful. Really,
Claire, you did mention the ponytail there, and I'm sure there's one or two players who managed to get whiplash as a result of the length of your hair during your career. But quite seriously, when you were playing competitive soccer, there must have been a set of guidelines which said, if you got long hair, you could only use, I don't know, a rubber band or whatever. I mean, presumably there were rules and regs for what you could and couldn't use to fix your hair.
I'm actually talking to a group of guys about hairstyle. Right? This is actually what's happening. I just want to make sure that I didn't take a dream.
But I want to go there.
Well, yeah, we're not allowed to wear metal in our hair. There are some very easily solutions around that. That aspect of it, yeah, it does make sense. You can slice your head open if you have a metal clip in your hair and you get hit. At one point, without a metal clip in my hair, I gave somebody stitches. So it's not a safe game regardless. But you're right. I mean, it comes back to kids playing. And I don't – the safety argument, it just doesn't have a leg to stand on. I think they're citing some FIFA regulation that says they don't specifically allow turbans, but there's no FIFA regulation that specifically disallows them. And I can't even talk about it.
Just to be abundantly clear, I'm completely against what the QSF is doing. No one's talking about this, but the Indian football team, the Pakistani football team, their cricket teams, no one on those teams wear turbans when they play. I'm not in the community. I don't know what the cultural significance of it is, but putting that together, is it, you know, us going, you know, politically correctness run amok almost, would you say?
Yeah, well, I mean, talking of the cricketers, I mean, there's a very famous Indian cricketer called Harbhajan Singh who does wear a turban, presumably because he is a Sikh and he wears it when he's playing and when he goes out to bat. I assume he puts his helmet on top of his turban and he goes out to bat, but he's probably the preeminent example of a professional sportsman, if you like, who actually wears a turban when he's doing the day job. Should we be concerned by Joey Saputo's statement on this stance? I mean, he started off by saying, first and foremost, personally, I got nothing against youngsters wearing turbans to play soccer. But then he sort of said, but I understand the QSF's position on this. Is he defending them?
I think he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. You know, you're either come out against us or not. So, I mean, you can on the one hand say, yeah, I mean, I've got no problem with kids wearing turbans and they should be allowed to play. And then on the other hand, in the same breath, in the same statement, basically saying I can understand why the QSF made the decision. As I said, he seems to be sort of sitting on the fence on this one, so which is fine. But if you want to come out and have an opinion, then come out and have
an
opinion.
I'm not sure he is actually sitting on the fence, and I've got a feeling, and reading, this has suddenly become a political issue, hasn't it? you know, with, you know, because the PQ in Quebec has aligned along with the QSF and said, yep, we're supporting what they're doing. And suddenly it's gone. It's transcended the game almost, Kurt.
And it's one of the, you know, the CSA didn't need something else, you know, another bump in the road while it's trying to clean house and get its act together. But, you know, that said, like you said, Quebec is coming more and more of a secular province, I think. But, you know, it shouldn't be happening at that level. If we want to talk about adults, if we want to talk about more competitive, if we want to talk about at a World Cup, should it be allowed? Then that's another question. But at the youth level, I shouldn't touch it.
Or if the impact, like, I mean, if a guy, if I don't know, if they had a Sikh player who, for the Montreal Impact who wanted to wear it, then I think it's when it's at that competitive level, then I think we can have a, you know, a legitimate discussion about it. But, you know, you're talking about children here, for crying out loud.
Yeah,
you're
trying to get far more of a political thing than anything else. I mean,
exactly.
I almost don't even think about the game when I think about the whole controversy. I almost don't think about it. And they've made it political. They haven't, I'm not even sure it kind of originated within the sport. I think it kind of originated within politics almost.
I'm not sure this is apples and apples, but one of the arguments I've seen is, well, nobody ever complains when you see a devout Catholic player, and we see it all the time, go on the field, you know, touch the turf, cross himself, so on and so forth. And therefore, you know, if that's acceptable, then turbans and any other religious symbols therefore should be acceptable. I mean, you know,
well,
I mean, obviously,
devout Catholic,
obviously not going to wear a cross.
Say, they're not allowed to wear a big metal cross, so it's, I mean, it's just such a, it's such a silly thing. And it, I mean, again, we're talking about kids. I keep harping on it, but we're talking about kids. And this is a game that everybody should be able to experience. And this is something that's a complete non-barrier that they have made one.
We've got so much more to discuss on the show, and we're 2/3 of the way through. We've got to get on to World Cup qualifying, the Confederations Cup. Frank Yallop is available again. I was quite surprised to see him leave the San Jose Earthquakes. You'll remember Frank Yallop. He coached the Canadian national team. He's back on the market, at least in theory. So should the CSA approach him and bring him back for a second time? Vacancy is there. What do you think? Email the show, nigel@fan590.com, or tweet me @Nigel_Reed. You're watching The Soccer Show on Sportsnet World and listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
~50% of the dynamic duo is here and the other 51% isn't, but he'll be back in 7 days. Nigel Reed, it's The Soccer Show with my guest Kurt Larson from the Toronto Sun, John Molinaro from Sportsnet, and Claire Rustad from a hospital somewhere in East Toronto, or thereabouts.
Yeah.
But a Canadian Olympian to boot, before she decided that she had to get a proper job.
Mm-hmm.
And a white coat.
I think I've got tuberculosis crawling all over me.
Really?
So, yeah.
I said bring your opinions, not contagious diseases, to the show. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Email The Soccer Show, nigel@fan590.com, which is what Robin Glover has done. Robin Glover describes himself as Rocket Robin. So we're delighted to hear from you, Robin, who says, Nigel and Bob, last week's show was one of your best. Robin, your powers of perception are amazing. I've been following the CSL, says Robin, Canadian Soccer League, for years, and it was interesting and nice to hear Jonathan Osorio talking about it in glowing terms last week on the show. If you missed that show, it's worth listening to again. Go and find the podcast on iTunes. He was very interesting, talking about his time in Uruguay and being toughened up in the CSL. Now, says Robin, we just need more fans to show up to the games. He continues, Claire, I watched Kadesha Buchanan debut for the Canadian national women's team in front of 22,000 in Toronto. We discussed that earlier in the show. The next week, says Robin, I saw her score the only goal in the Toronto Lady Lynx victory against London, and there was four men and a dog there. Great show. Keep up the good work. Buchanan was one of the bright spots of that game against the USA, it has to be said.
Best player on the field for Canada.
Yeah. And 17 years old.
Yeah.
Precocious talent, huh?
It's it's great to see. It's very exciting to see a youngster playing in the back line who is willing to put her body on the line anytime the ball comes near her, which is what she did, and she did that for 90 minutes. After the game, she looked totally exhausted, but that's how you should look after a 90-minute soccer game. And I was just very impressed with her. And I've seen her play at the youth level and was impressed with her there and had no doubts that she would eventually make her way up to the national team level. And she may have earned herself a spot as a defender. It's kind of exciting to see.
Well, I mean, that's part of the dilemma facing John Herbin, which we discussed with him on the show last week. And it's interesting to hear your take on it now, because he's got to find three or four, maybe more, players who can be there or thereabouts when 2015 rolls around. And as of last week, it was 2 years away. Buchanan may be one of them, but there are a number of young players, inexperienced international players, who've got to step up, to use one of your favorite expressions.
Oh, you'll never let me forget that.
Never.
No, John Herbin, he's a great coach. He has a plan. He has a direction for this team. But he does need to find young talent, and he needs to find it quickly. It's not easy to get 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds used to playing in competitive international matches. It's one thing to play in a friendly. It's a completely different thing to be preparing for multiple games in a row in a tournament like the World Cup. And he has a task on his hand if he's going to develop players within the next 2 years from those youth teams. There's talent there for sure, no doubt. After the under-17, under-20 World Cups last fall, there's talent there. Whether he can get that up to snuff by the time the World Cup rolls around.
Yeah, in time. In time.
That's the question.
And something that we said to him on last week's show was, you know, if there was another Christine Sinclair out there, John, surely we'd know about it already, wouldn't we?
I would think.
I mean, Sinclair is almost a freak by Canadian standards. She is a world-class player.
Right.
And he doesn't have three or four more 20, 21-year-old Sinclairs in the system, or at least if he does, he's not told us about them yet.
No, I think that's fair. What he does have, though, now is, you know, with the NWSL up and running, mm-hmm. a lot more Canadian players are getting regular, you know, first-team football on a first-time basis. I know that was... We had that in the past with previous women's leagues, but I think this one looks a lot more stronger and firmer and on more sort of firm ground. So I think, you know, you'll start to see the benefits of, you know, people like Kaylin Kyle and so many of the Canadian women team playing regular first team football, that when they come into camp for Canada, that, you know, they'll be, you know, better match fit and raring to go.
I thought against in the U.S. game that Canada's back line looked completely out of sorts on the three goals they conceded. And I mean, I think they all came basically the same way, just, you know, simple through balls played over the top between the right back and right center back. That needs to be addressed first. Goaltending's pretty average, but before that, the four girls in front of McLeod need to get it sorted out quick.
The midfield as well, though. I was disappointed with the performances put in by players who I've played with before and by players who have a lot of experience, mm-hmm. and I just expect more out of them. I'm not being harsh. I just expect more out of them.
Are they capable of more?
I think that the players that are playing that midfield, I think Sophie Schmidt is definitely capable of more. I think Diana Matheson is definitely capable of more. Desiree Scott has proven herself to be that hardworking player. Whether there is depth in the midfield, I'm not convinced. And whether there is depth that can last through 2012, I'm not convinced.
The other thing that strikes me, having watched that U.S. game...
By 2012, I meant 2015.
Of course you did. having watched that Canada... U.S. game. I mean, for 70 minutes, it was not a great spectacle. It wasn't. It was two teams that were essentially cancelling each other out. And then, as Kurt said, the Americans found another gear, found some through balls, and one going away in the end. My thought, having watched what Canada achieved from an offensive point of view, which wasn't an awful lot, was that Sinclair, world-class talent though she is, didn't really see much of the ball. And when 2015 rolls around, you know, and Canada comes up against what Herdman's called these tier one teams, the US and Germany and Japan and so on and so forth, much the same might happen again. So my thought would be, would it not be advantageous to bring her back into a more of an attacking midfield role rather than have her as the lone striker where she may not get much service?
I think part of the problem with dropping Christine back is you lose her ability to lose herself within the defensive line, to hide within the defensive line, and then use her speed going forward. You lose her her flat out acceleration onto through balls, and I mean she's great with her feet. There's no doubt about that.
So why not bring her more into the game?
Because then you lose her speed up front, and you perhaps lose some of her ability to get in behind and counterattack and score some goals quickly. I think the problem isn't necessarily her positioning. I think the problem is, like Kurt said, is filling in the weaknesses in the back line, making sure the performances are clean in the midfield, and making sure there are no weaknesses in the midfield in order to get the service. I think it's the service that's the problem, as opposed to where Christine's being placed.
Yeah, I mean, you could do with a Sinclair clone, one playing number 10 and one playing number 9. Mm. You know, it's obviously not going to happen. Do I have any, you know, supporters here in my campaign to perhaps bring Sinclair, get her more involved in these sort of games where the Canadian chances are going to be few and far between?
Possibly. I mean, maybe in against opponents like a Germany or a US or a Sweden. But I think, as Claire pointed out, I think when you drop her back, then you're not making use of her best strengths, which are her power and speed. I think, you know, first and foremost, the service just has to be much better. Yeah. I mean, she got no service and she was totally isolated up front. So fixing that is not... It's easier said than done, but if you can get that fixed and get regular quality service to her, then, you know, I think it'll be fine.
So horses for courses?
I'm not convinced that she's best when she's playing with her back to goal, when she's checking back to balls and playing in the midfield. I think, like Claire said, she's best when she's facing goal, running at defenders, creating on her own. That said, I think Herdman needs to do a better job of maybe moving her around. If it's stagnant, if she's stale at a certain place in the field centrally, then maybe try her out wide and move her around, shake whatever's going wrong.
That's something that forward line should be doing on their own. I mean, if you shouldn't be stagnant in one position up front. I mean, in the back line, yeah, you can't really, you know, swap around all that much. But if you're a forward and you're playing in a 4-3-3 and you got three forwards, mix it up. And have some creativity when you play. And if something's not working for you, find another space. Get somebody else in there and see if they can make use of it.
We've got 3 minutes left. From the women's team to the men's team, Frank Yallop, parting company with the San Jose Earthquakes after, I think, 5 years back since their reincarnation. Were a very good team in 2012. I think might have won the Supporters' Shield, certainly went into the playoffs, and here we are, and of course won the MLS Cup back in 2001 and 2003. And here he is having parted company. I was a little surprised to see that to start with, John. Yes? No?
Yes and no. Yes, because of the slow start to the season.
True.
But no, from the point of view that, you know, I think there was a power struggle there between him and Doyle, the GM. Obviously, Frank is, you know, accomplished coach. I get the sense that he wanted more sort of say in terms of, you know, just the running of the club. Okay. And, you know, I think he lost out on that.
So he's now available. Am I putting two and two together and making 5, 7, or 962 by suggesting that the CSA, who have a vacancy for a men's head coach, might give him a call?
Not going to happen. No, not going to happen. I like Frank quite a bit, and I think maybe, you know, he should get a chance somewhere down the line. But I think, you know, from all that I've heard and people I've talked to, the CSA is really sort of dedicated to finding themselves, you know, someone from, you know, Central America or South America who has the experience of going into places like, you know,
Honduras.
Exactly, and getting results. Mm-hmm.
So available and affordability are apparently no longer criteria. Or Canadian, for that matter.
Yeah, and just to get one thing straight, I'm not convinced San Jose was that great last year when they won the Supporters' Shield. I think they trailed in something like 60 or 70% of their matches.
But results are all that matters, Kurt.
Results matter, and it's funny that we're talking about a coach that got fired for having a poor record, and when you look at in our own backyard.
Well, yes. yes, I was trying not to go there, but...
No, but you know what? With Ben Olsen struggling in D.C., maybe look there as a possibility for Frank down the line. Completely agree with John. Not going to happen with Canada. There'd be so much backlash if it did. But I'm hearing the same things about them looking south.
Really? Okay. Which, on the face of it, Claire, when you're looking at a national coach who has to play, and this applies to the women as much as the men's, you know, in these hostile environments, and has to have that international resume and cachet, is perhaps a sensible way to go.
I mean, I would argue there are two extremes here. There's available and affordable, yeah. And then there's hiring a coach purely based on this will make us look awesome.
Which you might say the women's team did with Marachi.
That's exactly where I was going, Nigel. We are always on the same page.
We certainly are.
Well, and that was more of a, okay, this gives our program credibility simply because we are hiring an Italian who has worked with men before. And that backfired enormously. And I think the move that they made to pick up Herdman, who's young, he's energetic, he's enthusiastic, he's really excited to take on this team, was a very smart one.
So if it backfired with the women, why wouldn't it do so with the men?
Ooh.
Well, the music's playing. You see, I knew I'd stump them eventually. And
you stumped Molinaro, not us.
And it doesn't happen very often. And the answer is, well, there is no answer because you just never know, because everything depends on results, because that's what it is. It's a results-orientated business, coaching, as many are finding out, and will continue to do so. This program, happily, is not results-orientated, which is probably why we're still on the air after 7 years. I want to say thanks to Kurt, John, and Claire. I'm Nigel Reed, so you don't have to be. Until next time, thanks for watching.